Pick up your paintbrush. It's time for Hobby Support Group. Good evening, listeners. Good evening, Ben.
Evening, Tom.
Hello, listeners. Tonight I'm joined with Ben, and we are talking narrative gaming inspired by the recent Lord of the Rings game we played. And so we thought we would give this a chat. Well, Andy and Ed are off playing 10 mil ECW Master Moore.
Yeah.
We thought we would listen to me read Tom Bombadil songs. That is a
we'll
spoiler.
Sit in a room.
That's a spoiler for things coming up later on in this episode. So, really, what sort of got me and Ben talking and got us thinking about doing this as a topic for an episode is the fact that we played Middle-earth strategy battle game, what, the first scenario in the book, which is...
Yeah, one of the early ones, yeah, from the Quest of the Ringbearer book, which is the source book for the... which has all the scenarios around, based around Frodo and Sam's journey, really.
And we found, while sort of trying... I was playing the Hobbits, sort of trying to cross the Barrow Downs, and within, like, sort of, like, the first roll of... within really like the first turn when my rolls did typical Tom rolls and things went a little bit wrong. I was like, oh, one of the hobbits is running in the wrong direction. What's, you know, Merry going to do now? Peregrine's completely abandoned the mission and is going off. I thought, well, Merry could just leave him behind, pretend that he's not a US Marine and just leg it and try and win the mission. Or he could play in the spirit of the book and actually go after his friend. And so from that point, it wasn't really a thought, like from that point on, every action I made really was trying to keep in character how I imagine the characters worked. And somehow I managed to like pull off a victory, primarily because Tom Bombadil came in really quickly and then just sort of like nuked from orbit a ringwraith, sorry, a barrow right each turn. I was just like, boom, you've lost 50% of your wounds. Next turn, boom, you've lost the other 50%. Don't think he missed once.
He did so very well.
He was almost slightly sort of like overpowered, you know, the fact that...
Yeah, it's almost, yeah, being the spirit of all living things embodied. Yeah, it did like seem quite a lot of power to wield for one being.
It's the power of song.
Yes, indeed it was.
But I think probably sort of like the Lord of the Rings or like Middle Earth itself as a setting probably is maybe one that lends itself most readily to sort of narrative role-playing gaming. Because we're, you know, if you've read the books, you've probably got a pretty strong idea of how any character would act, well, most of the major characters, apart from Tom Bombadil, who obviously doesn't exist in the movies, in the book you do, but if you've watched the movies or the first half of the animated film, you've again got like a pretty good idea of what sort of, how characters are going to behave, their sort of personalities, I think, which you can lead into your gaming. You know, it's a little bit harder, you know, if you're trying to narratively play English Civil War and you go, well,
yeah,
I'm
absolutely
going to be in character of Prince Rupert this afternoon. Exactly. No, what am right, I going to do? Is he going to be
No, you're right. I think there's games that are set up for narrative gaming, aren't there, and games that we put narrative gaming into because it's the way we like to game, and I think the Middle-earth strategy battle game is one of those ones that, yeah, absolutely, Tom, you're absolutely right. It's totally set up for narrative gaming. And the fact that there are books full of narrative scenarios, which doesn't exist for other Games Workshop games, is a heavy, heavy hint that that is one of the ways it's been designed to play as well, which is really nice. And then when you look at the character sheets that were, as we were playing, you look at the stats for the characters and the special abilities. It's all very themed in a lovely way that enables you to really see how they have been following the story along in the book and then drawn out key elements and placed that into the rules to give it that flavour. So that when you're calling Tom Bombadil, the rules for calling Tom Bombadil are based around the song that that is sung by the hobbits to call Tom Bombadil. Which, Tom, you on the night I made you sing if you wanted Tom Bombadil to arrive.
Hey, Doe, Merry Doll, Ring Ding a Dillo, Ring a Dong, Hop Along, Hollow the Willow, Tom Bomb, Jolly Tom, Tom Bombadillo. Twice I had to sing it because I failed the role.
That's true. That's true. But I very much appreciate the fact that you did it and you got into the spirit. And it's that kind of thing that makes narrative gaming so good. But,
well, I completely agree. And I think what makes something like the Middle-earth strategy battle games of like scenario campaign books, I think, both brilliant and terrible at the same time, for regardless of depending from where you're sitting as a gamer, in that I think they're not going to have massive replayability, but they are immense fun to play once or twice. And I think that is great. I don't think that's a problem at all. I think like the mission that we played, I would think realistically it's quite hard for the Barrow Wrights to win. But then if you're playing, although my friends who have played it for us, it's actually they've never beat it. As
oh, really?
Hobbits,
wow.
The Hobbits have already captured both the Barrow Wrights. But I think, you know, when you're playing, you know, a campaign or you're planning that journey of like the Hobbit's journey to Bree, you kind of really need the Hobbits to get to Bree. It's going to be a very different book if you know, they didn't even get out of Barrow Downs. Yeah. They're done. And I think the joy can be had there almost in, like, this is contradictions quite often what I say with games, about having almost that like a simulation, like recreation thing of like, oh, well, player A can never win this scenario. They're always going to lose because it's just stacked against them. But I think you can have a lot of fun while still pretty much being coded in to lose, because you're telling the story in the mission, and it doesn't really matter who wins or loses, because like it doesn't, like we just rolled for who was playing who, and then we collaboratively told the story in with that mission. And I think that's the difference I find with narrative gaming, in that you're not really playing against your opponent. You and your opponent are like collaboratively telling the story. It just happens to be, well, at the moment I'm moving these figures, they're moving these figures, but how we're both working to tell the story together. And I think that is a different experience of how you can play missions and really enjoy missions once or twice and have so much fun doing them. But this is a really great gaming experience. I don't need to go back and do it again because of like, I've already done it. And I think many campaigns are like that. And like you play a great campaign scenario and you go, well, that's a really cool scenario. I don't really want to necessarily play it again in a hurry because of the various constraints to it. But I think something like, especially like the Middle Earth ones, where you can like look through those books and you go, right, what do I actually need to cover everything in this entire book? It is relatively achievable if you're a moderately ambitious hobbyist. And it's not like something like, I know, for example, like Andy and Ed are like playing Master Maul this evening, and like it's their second, like that it's part two because they played it on Saturday or Sunday as well. And like when they were sort of like working up the orders of battle, like Andy worked out he needed something like 62 units of shot for it. And it's like, we don't need, you know, 62 units of, you know.
No, your side had 6 models.
Yeah.
And my side had 4. Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right, Tom. And I think that not being able to replay it in the same way, having that replayability is mitigated by, as you say, by that kind of campaign driven element behind narrative gaming, which often is part of it. And those books are designed as really to be played in sequence if you can, if you can gather the forces and gather the scenery to do that, to play them in sequence in one day. That we, I think we'd like to do that, wouldn't we, Tom? But if we get around to it. And I think that brings in the other element I really like about narrative gaming is that it, I like to put together a good looking table. And I think narrative gaming, when you know you've got a story to tell, it's a real kind of inspiration to put together a few bits of terrain and things like that 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 really fit that particular part of the story. And I think when looking on the Hobby Support Group terrain page, I know that there's other people in the group, like people like Warren in particular, who feel similarly. And you can see the scenery that Warren's knocking up and the characters that Warren's knocking up for his Rangers of Shadowdeep gaming and the scenarios based in that, which feel like they are very narrative. I've not played it, but it seems to be a very narrative system. And he's putting together specific terrain setups and models for that, which will add beautiful models to his collection, but also allow him to just have these really stunning and interesting narrative games as well.
Yeah, again, completely agree. I find it more and more, it's not just a case of building the army or now building both armies for forces so you can have like the correct army, because, you know, I've had enough of playing, you know, communist Chinese versus DAC fighting in Swiss Alps. You know, it's fun at the time, but I just don't want to do that kind of gaming anymore. And so it's now, I've like the logical step from that was doing both forces, and I've now moved on to doing both forces and some suitable terrain. And it's both suitable terrain, so it fits in with actually what I've got. You know, if this is a game or a battle that takes part in a wood, I'm going to make sure I've got a wood. But also I want to make sure I've got a wood that is reflected and looks correct with the rest of the models that I've got. So it's, and this is, you know, inspiration from Per Broden. You know, he was annoyed that one of the woods that he'd got for his Northern War boards had like the wrong trees. They had like the wrong kind of conifers for the time of year. So he had to, you know, redo them for the correct foliage. I was like, I can appreciate that. And at the time, I thought it was bonkers. But now I am fully enmeshed in that level of, you know, because I think it's those things that just add more levels of enjoyment to it. And definitely this year, when I've done a lot less sort of like volume of gaming, so my gaming time has become a lot more precious to me. I'm much more invested and willing to put more time in to have quality games. I think playing like, you know, a game every, you know, like 6 weeks or so, but it's a really memorable game.
Yeah,
I find much more exciting than playing the game every week, but they just sort of like all blend into each other. I'm like, well, what did you play 2 weeks ago? Can't really remember.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely, I feel completely the same way. And I think I think narrative gaming helps build a memorable experience, doesn't it? That's the beauty of a narrative game, because we humans are designed to be storytellers, and we understand things through stories and the way that things develop. So I think if we've got a good game that is developing in a that has a narrative to it, it is inherently more memorable for us because that's the way our brains work. So I think for me, narrative gaming does tend to produce the most memorable games that I've had, the ones where I can think of the story of the game, how it played out, and the characters that appeared in it, even if they're not named characters. You know, they suddenly take on a character of their own. And like when I play Andy at the Chain of Command, he will always bring up Slopey Jim.
Yeah.
Who was one of my unnamed infantrymen who became a character in the game. So it's, yeah, I think that narrative gaming is really helpful for that, making memorable experience.
Well, I think it's something that I think probably all gamers do to a greater or lesser extent. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of it can quite often be you doing it without necessarily acknowledging that you're doing it. Because yes. I would say, like, especially sort of like in the historical field, most of the armies that we create are already telling some part of a narrative, because you're choosing, like, the first thing is what army you're playing is telling, you know, the larger narrative, but then what units are represented within that, you know, what flags are you choosing to use, what specific battle are you doing? And I think this is quite interesting. You know, if you look at something like Napoleonics, a great many of us decided to do Napoleonics. And because we were all left to our own devices, we came up with kind of like a smorgasbord of armies and periods that we're doing. So, you know, we've got everything from sort of like Portuguese to Haitians to everything and everything else in between. None of us are really sort of like rocking around at the same period at the same time. I think me, you and Ed, I think are the only people who have like Waterloo-eared armies, and then even mine sort of a bit.
And then, but then Ed and I have gone almost literally for exactly the same units as well. because Waterloo, the movie.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
Well, it's. I think that's. I think that again, it leads into that thing of telling a story, doesn't it?
And yeah. Absolutely.
I think, you know, like why? You know, I think like this is something that we've definitely talked about on the podcast before. It's things. You know, one of the reasons why World War II. I think as wargaming is like so popular is because you have things like Band of Brothers, especially, and also like lesser extent sort of like movies like Saving Private Ryan, but especially sort of like Band of Brothers, you know, to the fact that like, you know, the bolt action starter set is called Band of Brothers because it gives you sort of like, it gives people an entry point into what they want to do. And I'm sure whenever like a World War II movie or a series comes out, people will use that as their jumping off point, and it's quite easy to go into. You know, even like Sharp Practice, you know, Saturday afternoon Napoleonics. You know, you have to be of a certain vintage to have watched Sharp, but it was the entry point, I'm sure, for a very great many people into Napoleonic.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens with the new Napoleon movie, obviously, that has just hit cinemas at the moment, because I think that's going to be... I can see a number of war gamers suddenly thinking, oh, that's interesting. And Warlord Games might do quite well out of that one.
Yeah, he could almost be like, you know, the epic Waterloo could be...
Yeah, I'll flip it out, yeah.
They will be
walking off the shelves.
That maybe there'll be some, you know, 12.5 mil scale pyramids and stuff cracking up soon. But I think also, you know, like narrative gaming doesn't just have to be historicals or like high fantasy. Can, you know, obviously one of the great things about, you know, 40K and fantasy before they blew up the old world was its lore. And you know, if you're playing 40K and you like the fluff, it's quite fun to sort of play, playing X Space Marine Legion or chapter. I'm just going to play the mindset of them and sort of like, oh, you know, you play orcs. What do I do? Blah, 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 sort of like.
Yes, yeah. I think you're right. And actually, the Games Workshop game I've played most and collected most of recently, well, I suppose the two that I've kind of really engaged with at the moment. One is the Adeptus Titanicus, which most of the missions for, in fact, almost all of the missions for, are narrative missions. It's very heavily built around the Horus Heresy narrative gaming, with missions and scenarios that are very much narrative driven. So I find it unsurprising that kind of has drawn me in a little bit, because it is a game designed around narrative gaming. And the other one would be Necromunda, which again, because you're already starting off with named characters. You're starting off with named characters with specific gear and within a little gang unit. They've got roles within the gang. that each game becomes its own little story as well. Yeah, so I think those ones in particular have really kind of landed with me recently. Well, so recently, over the last 5 years or something, you know. Yeah.
No, I do think it's that having, like, everything makes some kind of impact, or like either like having a game, like, yeah, with Sloopy German Chain of Command, where like something happens in the game and it can like either be like become part of the lore of that game, and then like whenever, like, it's how, you know, Oliver Cromwell became a ladies' man because he rolled on the trait table and that's him for evermore christened. But yeah, how you can like have, sometimes it can just be like a one-off thing which happens, becomes, oh yeah, when you're playing those like campaign games and it goes, well, this Jew've managed to have a lucky shot with a las pistol and took out their gang chieftain and got, you know,
yeah,
a skill point. Or, you know, the great thing, like, you know, Blood Bowl, you know, you'll get your MVP and, you know, your Gretchen kicker or something will get a skill up, and what's he getting? He's getting block. Or, you know, something really fantastic like that. Or, you know, dodge on a dwarf or something. But which sort of, again, like, tells Nigel, you know, this gang is absolutely useless. Like, they even get useless. Yeah, even my MVPs and my skilled up players gets useless skills to play, which kind of like feed more and more into that. And I would also, I think games which struggle to have that, or are so open that they don't really give you a scaffold and a framework to attach a narrative to, I think are games that I personally really struggle to engage with. Mm. And I think, personally, I find like generic sci-fi the absolute hardest to sort of gel with, because it's like, is it Star Wars? Is it Star Trek? Is it cyberpunk? You know, give me sort of something.
Need a hook. Need some kind of hook.
Yeah, I need some sort of hook. You know, give me, it's a bit like this, but put your own spin on it. Because if it's just too bland, or you've got the option of, oh, it's everything all at once, it's kind of, I find it a bit too much of like a world building exercise to do, despite, you know, doing world building quite a lot. I quite like, for gaming, it's sometimes nice to have 3/4 of the world already built for you. You know, give me the world to play in, I'll play in that, just maybe come up with a whole world myself. And I think the same with like very, very bland, generic sci-fi, with generic fantasy, sorry. I think if it's just, well, dragons and there's elves, so right, well, what else have we got going on? You know, are we high fantasy or low fantasy? You know, again, give me like a, you know, if someone says, oh, it's like pulpy low fantasy, it's like, boom, right. It's like we're in the Conan stories, you know, we're looking for thinking elephant face statues and giant snakes and that sort of stuff, you know. If it's high fantasy, then fine. Well, I just find, like, I don't know about you, but I much prefer it where the game itself at least sort of pictures things a little bit. And it's one of the things that I like about Xena's Rampant, which is, although it's like a very open game and it's sort of everything, it actually sort of sets itself within the, you know, if you want to play like within this kind of universe,
yes,
these are some ideas. If you want to play Star Trek, legally distinct, this is legally distinct Star Trek. If you want to play legally distinct space western, here.
Yeah.
If you want to do like,
it's heavily, yes, it's heavily leans towards certain worlds, doesn't it? And universes,
which is helpful. Which I think is really helpful, because I think if it's just like make it all up yourself, it's like, well, I've only got like so much, you know, creative energy that I'm going to put into telling the game. It's not like I want to, before I start playing the game, it's not like I want to sort of do like a, as if I'm running like a GM session and spend a couple of days coming up with like the world and everything. Does this, and I think like some games do allow you, that's one of the things that I really liked about Oathmark when it came out, was the fact that you can do all that sort of like world building and like, you know, well, I've got like, this is my kingdom and I have these lands and this is why I've got like the giant that's recruited here and like I've got some elves from this forest and all that sort of stuff. But fortunately, that game like never really went anywhere because it came out during lockdown, and so like built forces for it but never played it. I don't think anybody else really sort of just play it, but I did like that sort of concept for it, of how you can like tell a story behind your army before you sort of really put it on the table, and how like when you're playing games, like, oh, we captured this, you know, random cave or something. Oh, look, there's like a bog witch that lives there. We can recruit them for like a future games, which is again like a mechanic that I really quite like, and I think it's something that, you know, feeds into campaign games where you have, well, what happens in one game does affect another game, but and if there's extra mechanics that let you tell a narrative through your games.
Yeah, I think often, yeah, you're right, and I think often narrative games tend to be a little bit shorter, don't they, as well, I find. It tends to not. It's quite nice to be able to play two or three in an evening, if you can, with narrative games, to be able to kind of get a bit more of that storytelling done.
They tend to have sort of relatively clear-cut victory conditions, don't they? It's like you're going to try and do a thing.
Yes.
When you've done the thing, it's done. Or, like, the flip side is, if you know you're not going to achieve the thing, you could, you know, if you're sort of like playing like a Chain of Command game and it's going terrible, you can go, well, I can just stay in this and become like even more combat ineffective for future missions, or I can try and bail that.
No, I think you're right. And I think I think maybe the reason for that is, why, because I suppose when you're playing a war game, you're not getting an awful lot of character development, I suppose, within the game itself. if you're thinking of it in narrative terms, you're not getting an awful lot of character development. Whereas if you're playing like a tabletop RPG game, just built around narrative, as you're playing your character, you're making decisions about your character, your character's reacting in certain ways to things. You can vocalize what that is. You can vocalize that is that they're there's much more character development whilst the game is being played, and so it drives the narrative constantly forward. Whereas within a war game, within the game, you play a scenario. You get to the end of the scenario, they've either won or lost the scenario. You play another scenario, they've won or scenario. And it tends to be the kind of in-between times between the encounters. It's kind of that in-between encounter time, which in RPG is where all the interactions happen and the kind of the character development conversations happen in a tabletop RPG. That's, the I suppose, what would happen between games in a narrative set of scenarios. So where you would have, like, gaining skills, like you might have models that gain skills or things like that. Which is where I think linked scenarios work particularly well for narrative gaming, for that reason, because it allows you to almost develop a character in a way that affects what's happening on the table, which then affects the next thing that's happening on the next scenario, and then the next scenario, if you're sitting down for a 3-hour Napoleonic game, you're not gonna get a huge amount of character development. Yeah, we're not anticipating each individual soldier to develop its character during that game. But if you could have 3 40-minute games with some development of those particular characters within that time, I think that could be, that's a really interesting evening of gaming.
Well, I think it's been overused this evening, but I completely agree. But I think also I think obviously you have, like, there are different types of game run, and even like RPGs. I know, like, I've been in D&D groups where every week, within 3 minutes you're in combat and you just basically move from room to room, murdering everything and everything that you come across. And likewise, I've played in campaigns where you realise, like, you've been playing for 3 or 4 hours and no one's actually rolled a dice, because you've just been, like, in character chatting and like the DMs realize, like, you haven't actually done anything that requires, you know, skill checks or anything, because you've just been, like, yeah, in character developing your characters, or like deciding what to do next, rather than just let's go and murder something. But I also think, as you were saying there, that how you can, like, maybe having like smaller things there. You could possibly, in like the tradition, looking at a tradition like a big war game, you could tell a narrative by having a whole series of linked games by focusing on like tiny individual parts of it with specific like conditions. Like, does this, if this happens in this game, then on the wider thing, something else, it will be like a, there will be a plus or a minus negative to the bigger thing. And like an example that I've just thought, it might be something like, you could have an entire like short game, which is the idea of like, it's a World War II game. You've got a German resupply column that's trying to get some ammunition trucks to like a flak factory. So you could just have a short mission where it's just, you've got to try and get this truck of flak ammunition to that battery. That's the entire mission. Maybe just like a little table, whatever, you can have all sorts going on. But then when you, like in a big game, it might just be you roll a d6 to see if the flak battery is resupplied or something. If you had the time to do it, you actually go, well, no, we're going to play an entire little mission to see if that battery is a mini game to see if that battery is rearmed or not. And it could be, well, they used all their ammunition in the first bombing raid. They're out of ammo now, and they've not been resupplied, so they've got no ammo for the next evening. And I think you could like, and you could almost like break down a huge battlefield into loads of those tiny little different things, and actually say, well, this is, you know, because I think it's something that war games quite often struggle to do, is to have that idea of like how much time is going on in the battle, aren't they? Well, this entire game that we're playing is, you know, if this was a real engagement, would take about 45 seconds. Or this entire engagement that we've played would take about 3 weeks. And quite often you sort of like, you don't necessarily sort of tell on the table exactly what's happening. You know, it's like, oh, well, they advanced over this hill, they then charged down, cleared them out, moved on, and they're on to the next thing. Or, you know, you're reading around, you know, yeah, it took them like 7 days to get over the hill, but then were then like stuck in the bottom for 2 days. So I think, again, you could have like all kinds of things that you could bring into games. Oh, they're at the top of they succeeded in that. They're now like in the bottom of the valley. There's no water in the bottom of the valley. We need to have a mission to try and get them some resupply of food or water. Whatever. And like, I think it could definitely like have the potential to like bog down games and make them just really, you know, quite tedious. Like, great, another resupply.
Too crunchy, yeah.
But I think it could potentially be like quite a lot of fun. Especially for like 20th century games, it would possibly give you that sort of like opportunity to actually do like patrolling and like counter patrolling, which no game really does, but it's kind of like quite important when you sort of like, I know that like obviously like Chain of Command does have the like whole pre-game patrolling bit, but
to play it out more as like as a literal encounter between two patrols, it'd be interesting.
But I think again, I think it's something that you could sort of like play around with all sorts. And it's like, I know, again, I've talked about the podcast, it's maybe something like with historics, you could almost have like a pre-game or like an in-game real magic phase. Well, you know, if you're doing the Romans where they're taking the port and all that sort of stuff, you know, they're like checking the entrails, feeding chickens, whatever or you're doing like Dark Age battles, it's like, well, they've got their magic cow, what have we got? Or we've got a magic flag. That kind of stuff, which is like, at the time, very like it's real to the people who are there.
Yes.
How do you could maybe like do like little different mini game like role play bits with that, and you can go, well, my wizard's going to like, you know, try and psych out your wizard. Let's do some wizard battles.
Yeah, go and consult the oracle. You need to climb to the oracle to consult her.
Yeah, you know, you need to do a song and dance routine in front of your men. That is going to inspire them more than the other dude on the other side who's doing the exact same thing. So which of you is, you know, which of you has the better improv skills to...
Absolutely. And that should be a literal dance in the room, in my opinion.
I think it's... This is it. You know, you should get a plus one.
Absolutely. Are we getting on to dressing up now? Because I...
I did draw the line. I don't have a blue jacket or any yellow boots.
But I know. It's sad.
But no, I think it... Like, nobody should be... There should be no, like, pressure for anyone for doing any of it. And, you know, obviously, like, you know, we're not telling... You know, if you start playing the Polyonics, you've got to sort of turn up in, like, a full Visage uniform. Bloody guards again. Off, you know, get... but I do think, like, those little things... Like, I know, like, when we're playing The Lord of the Rings, like, you'd go into the effort... of, like, setting up, like, the movie soundtrack and stuff, which, again, just made it much cooler.
Adds a little something, doesn't it? Yeah.
It's just those little bits that I think, like, you know, soundtracks especially, I think are becoming more common with, like, role-playing games. Like, I see, like, quite a few, like, online modules and stuff now. Like, well, like, this is a module. This is, like, a Spotify playlist for, like, ambient background music.
I like that.
The same sort of thing. Yeah, especially, you know, if you're playing, like, you know, Waterloo or something, having, you know, Waterloo on in the Absolutely. Background or something, it's not the worst thing.
I think it's great, and there's so much stuff out there now. You can find pretty much anything you want, can't you, for that kind of thing to set the scene. I think setting the scene, I think, is really helpful, and we've talked before about, like, the Star Wars game that I played, and just how, just like when you're setting up a game with people, even like doing, like, reading a starting scroll for the Star Wars game, almost like to get people into that world of something they recognize from that particular world, I suppose, helps start telling the story, placing it in a story to start with. I think it's really helpful, and the idea of just having narrative gaming tending to have some kind of scenario driven plot, really, isn't it? It's very rare that a narrative game would be a turn up and have a fight.
Well, yeah, you don't very much get have a fight. Whoever loses the most models during said fight loses. I suppose even if you do have that, they're then very much like still telling a narrative, aren't they? It's like something like, you know, the Scouring of the Shire, is, you know, it's the hobbits trying to kick off, you know, they're trying to, you know, get the Shire back. And I think, you know, and so I think, yeah, you don't just have that pitch, well, you know, hold objective one, you know, place d6 objectives and hold them. You know, it's like, you know, they're holding the Green Dragon, they're holding the Brandywine Bridge, that, you know, someone's mucking it about a frogman, and it's even if you just have like those, a little bit more thought into what it is you're doing, I think makes more sense.
Absolutely, and I think if you can build in little cheeky rules. So the Scouring the Shire thing, for example, yeah, it's a battle, but at the same time, there's characters in there like Rosie Cotton and things like that, which Sam reacts differently to than he does to other people. So if she's in trouble, Sam will have to go and try and rescue her, that kind of thing, you know. So I think introducing little thematic rules that are specific to a particular scenario that you're playing can be quite interesting and make that quite helpful. Making models react in certain ways in certain situations sometimes.
Well, I think that's where you come to like the Marmite factor of it, don't you? And so that like really appeals to me. It's like, oh, you might have this plan that you want Sam to do, but because he sees that she's in trouble, he's not going to do that. He's going to go and save her, which is like a very human thing to do, even though it's a halfling. And I think that, like, that's one of the things that I quite enjoy about Chain of Command. It's that, like, you might have this great plan for what you want to do, and you can't actually do it because, no, you've not got the dice to do what you want to do. It's like, you could do that, but you can't because, you know, in reality, it's because they haven't received the orders. They've been told to not engage or whatever.
Yeah.
So like there are reasons.
And that forces you to create a narrative around that, doesn't it? So I think it's the same. So where, like with Sam, with the chain of command thing, with playing Adeptus Titanicus and you roll, you don't get the command roll you want, or your reactor's overheating or something like that, out of your control. When these things happen, you're then forced to come up with okay, what's the reason for this? And I think some people find that relatively easy to do. And they tend to get on with narrative gaming better. And some people find that a real struggle to do. That's not necessarily the part of the gaming that they enjoy. And then they probably won't find narrative gaming quite so much fun, which is fine, of course.
Yeah, I would say, I think it probably boils down, and this might be like a gross generalization, but too much like, do you like to play games to win? Or... Do you like a game where you could be on like a dead cert, nailed in victory, and then something completely out of your control happens, and it's then like, well, you were going to win, but because of something that you had absolutely, and like you'd done everything correct, but then something that was completely out of your control happened, and then so you've now lost because of arbitrary reason, whatever. You could be like, you know, you had to like, you perfectly positioned your tank, so as soon as like the enemy tank came round the corner, they were going to get sort of like blindsided in the side armor and everything, and then when they actually do drive by, you can't activate your tank. And it's like, well, because they were, you know, in like my head it's like, well, it's because they were like so like keyed up to get into position, they sort of got into position and then started brewing up, and then like, you know, missed the enemy coming by when you know they're looking for a teabag, which I kind of like. But also with my dice rolls, I quite sort of like that, and I find it actually sort of like, it tells that narrative, yeah, well, you know, that tank crew are, you know, not exactly getting mentioned in dispatches today. But then also you go, well, in a future game, they might do something that's like, you know, probably going to get them killed or get the commander of EC because they're trying to sort of like counter the like previous blunder. And I like it, but I think also for me, I think going back to like the Star Wars thing, I think both as somebody who plays games a lot, but also when you're playing with another people who don't necessarily game as much, if you give someone like two or three stormtroopers to control and you go, you're the stormtroopers, you kind of know what, you instantly know what they're going to do, and you go, well, they're probably going to shoot, they're probably going to miss, they're probably not going to be very good, but you're playing as a stormtrooper. It's not, you're not playing as yourself. You're playing as some troops which are probably just there to be marked. I think it's only positives, really. Like, definitely for like my point of view of like what I like is gaming, I'm more and more happy to put like more and more levels of narrative and, you know, probably like hurdles to some people's enjoyment. In there, because I think it's just more and more scaffolding and world building that I enjoy, and I like it can lead to like with like larger historical games can lead to like a little bit of bookkeeping, but I'm not bothered. I think it can add like a huge amount to it, and I think so even something like the Middle Earth game, it has like, it's fine because like especially like the scenario we played, I had like six models track, but each individual model has to have like their own little dashboard, so you like you can be tracking like quite a few different things. And you know, Mr. Bombardier himself has like, you know, 15 spell points that, you know, he burns as he casts spells. Admittedly, you know, like a laser guided missile, you're knocking barrel right off with them. But so like if you're just more, if you're not into doing that amount of sort of bookkeeping, so even something like Necromunda or Blood Bowl, so, you know, there is like at the end of, it's like you finished your game, there is now like the post game sequence, which can take like 20 minutes, half an hour, while you're rolling everyone's skills, and then you know, right, what loot did we get right, what am I buying, blah de blah de blah de blah. And again, that can be a deal breaker for some people, can't it? They can go, actually, I like moving toys about on the table, I don't like doing junior accountancy, whatever. Like, and I think different games do it to different degrees, don't they? I think you as an individual and like a gaming group find a level that you like. And
I think so, Tom. And I think at its most basic level, in terms of narrative gaming, all you have to do is just name a few of the models. And as soon as you give a few of the models a name, you start telling a story, just because you start tracking that model and seeing what it's doing, and it just becomes a little bit of a narrative game in itself, whatever game you're playing. So I think there's levels, aren't there? Yeah, you're right.
It doesn't even have to be individual models, does it? It can be like entire units. It's like I know, like in like the weird alternative English Civil War that most of us have been fighting for like 4 years now, nearly. Like the Tower Hamlet boys are nearly invulnerable because in one of the big 28 mil games, there's like just a unit of unsupported shot, which I charged with a full unit of Northern Horse, and the horse just evaporated around them. So it's like, which like statistically shouldn't happen even with Andy's rolling. So I then charged them with another unit and the exact same thing happened. So now, and like they were just like, oh, there's Tower Hamlet boys, I'm charging them with this like two unnamed regiments of Northern Horse. So it just like ended, it's like entered our game policy now that like you never charge the Tower Hamlet boys because they will always murk you. And they do, they are. Although when sometimes they will occasionally die in a game, and it's such a moral victory when you've killed them. It's
like, yes,
it's the game within a game to kill them. To spend, regardless of what game we're playing, as soon as they're on the table, it's like they are going to die. To the point that I've now modelled my own. There are the red and the white battalion are on the field for Charrington. They were technically there, so I can have my own. I think hopefully, listeners, this has sort of been interesting to hear, you know, me ramble on about how I like narrative games and Ben support me and just me saying, I completely agree quite a lot. But I think as so many things we seem to be saying more and more on the podcast really is, you take what you like, adapt it, and ditch what you don't like. You know, if you're playing Necromunda and you find half the bookkeeping really annoying, or like something like Blood Bowl and you find the like randomly rolling skills really annoying, there's nothing, of course, like you and the gaming group that you're playing with decide, right, you can pick what skills that you want, or you can pick from like a set of skills. Maybe it's a bit too, you know, exploitative if you can specifically pick what character is getting what skill. But you could definitely say, right, you've got a choice of like three skills that you can automatically choose, or choose roll for a random one. Because like the amount of times when I play Blood Bowl, I have got like a skill upon a character which is completely wasted. Yeah, you're someone with a broken leg and then they get like, you know, something else that just makes them like, you know, even slower, or like, you know, dodge on something who's got like agility one. So fantastic. So that sort of thing. And or you can like strip out, I know like in the past when I played Necromunda, you know, we did things that like stripped out quite a few of the like random weapon roll things, because we found it just made gangs a little bit too good when somebody's got like a couple of gangers with like grenade launchers and loads of fancy grenades. Kind of doesn't become so much of a fun game, so just take some of that stuff out. But it's just, I think it's just finding out what works for you and what doesn't. And I know within our like gaming group, of you know, our small group, we've come more and more round to kind of inadvertently playing with sort of a referee, generally Ed. Because we'll play at his house. Mostly, but having that, or if not like a referee, whoever's like putting on the game, and so, you know, whose terrain and toys it is, generally has kind of like a deciding voice. So it's like, oh, I think we should do this. And somebody else says, well, I think you should be this. It's like, arbiter, what do you think?
Yeah, we have a games master essentially.
Yeah, but also we sort of like tell the stories of the games that we're playing more and more, and as we just keep ditching rules and go, well, that seems a bit weird, or that seems a bit unfun, or a bit clunky. Let's bin it, or let's just negate. It makes it impossible for us to play with other people who we don't play with regularly, because we go, this is our version. But I think when you're playing lots of the games that we are playing, really, it's not like you're going to be playing them in a massive tournament, is it? So you're playing them for fun with your friends, and it might be within like a small group in someone's living room, could be within like a larger gaming group. And if it's just a game that you're playing for fun, why not make it however fun it is for you? And you know, if there is a bit too much randomness in there, turn it down a bit. If you like a bit more randomness, chuck more randomness in there. I know one mechanic that I know a few people who play quite a lot of Bolt Action do is they have the idea of chucking in like a third coloured order dice, so like that when that's pulled out, it ends the turn. So like not anybody. So like it could be like somebody's activated four of their units. They've only got like four units, four dice left in the bag. No one's the second player's not activated none of theirs yet. Yeah, that when they pull a dice out, they pull that dice out that ends the turn. All the dice are back in the bag. Away you go again. Again, it can be infuriating, but I think again it can add like an extra level of friction to the game. Go, actually, well, you had this plan that you knew you were going to be able to do this in a minute. But the turn's gone now, so the thing that had moved and you were definitely going to be able to shoot can possibly now move again. Next time I get around to playing Bolt Action, which is not in no hurry too, it's something that is something I might try to
switch
it up a bit. Would you have anything to add before we
finish? No, I don't think so, but just if you haven't tried much narrative gaming, I'd say give it a go. It's jolly good fun.
Jolly good. I think that's it's a good jolly. I would highly recommend it. And I think I would say, I think it can't be understated, I don't think, how much fun it can be to pick a good, fun campaign and just do it, play it through with a mate as a modelling and hobby project. And have a check like of the read through and like do a little bit of research before you fully commit to it, and like check that you go, oh, this is really fun, and then you sort of like find you start playing it, and then you find, oh yeah, these first like 10 scenarios I need like either like 10 models or like half a dozen units, but then like by the time I get to like the 30th scenario I'm needing like 350 models or like 78 units. So or you end up needing like terrain setups that's like for a single mission you sort of need like 8 feet of trench lines or something like that. I know we have a friend, Bo and John, that they play a lot of the like Bolt Action campaign books, and that falls into that category quite often. You have like 6 or 7 scenarios that need like 7 different tables of terrain, and there's like this month we'll play this scenario, and it's like, right, that's June. October we'll play the next one when I've got the trenches built. I think luckily, like the Middle Earth Strategy Battle Game books don't really have that as much, do they?
There's a few bits and pieces.
There are a few bits and pieces, but it's not quite like things can pull more double duty, can't they?
Well, some of them. I think when you get like the seeing seat and then there's a few bits and bobs which aren't quite so
helpful. But I guess,
they're fun modelling projects.
I suppose that is the problem of doing something though that is like very IP specific, isn't it? And you're going like,
exactly.
I can't use like Weathertop as Amonhen because I need the different. And I need the Argonauts for this. I can't just have some random giant statue that's going to crop up somewhere else, because no, it's not one of the Argonauts. You can do, you just have to, you know, it's the, suppose it's the theatre of the mind, isn't it? And go,
well, yes, exactly, yeah.
But it is what you make it, and I would, you know, HSG recommendation would be give it a go.
Do it.
Yeah.
You won't regret it. Well, you might. But we'll like to see the pictures anyway.
Yeah, but if you give it a go and it's not really for you, no great loss. Yeah.
And if you give it a go and you're doing some good narrative gaming, tell us the stories. We'd love to see the photos and hear the stories, what's played out in the group.
Do you know what, I think you've just come up with an idea for a future episode there, Ben, of favourite gaming stores. You know, so we can bore listeners with anecdotes of, you know, Tower Hamlet Boys, Ladies Man Cromwell, Sleepy Joe,
If you've got a favourite story from your gaming experience, just record it on your telephone and send it to us. And then maybe we could do a collected episode one day of gamers' stories.
I think that could be a Christmas episode that you've just come up with for the idea for us there, Ben. That is becoming a legally distinct concept now that we are just blatantly stealing. Thank you very much. Thank you, listeners. We'll be back soon. Good night, everyone.
Thanks, Phil. Bye.
Bye.